Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. Thanks for joining us. Now, as you listen to the show, change can be hard. I get it, especially if the change you're facing, you didn't choose, right? And it was thrust upon you. So to help you on your journey of change, I have a free gift for you. It's my communication style assessment. If we can learn to communicate in a more authentic, real, direct, but fair way, I think that we can create harmony in the world. So take the test. Understand what your natural communication superpowers are, and the flip side, your lowest score, which is probably the style that is the hardest for you to communicate with. That doesn't mean that there can't be magic with those people, even though they think and communicate differently than you. So take the test, understand your superpowers and your blind spots, and I do hope that it helps you navigate whatever change that you're dealing with in your life. Now, my motivational quote today is by Chris Gosser, and Chris says, opportunities don't happen. You create them. Now, I've learned through many years of success, and let's face it, probably even more failures, that I always needed to keep putting that one foot in front of the other. Movement forward has always created new opportunities for me because I think I was open to receiving while being in motion. So pivoting was a lot easier than constantly trying to come up with the new perfect next step, right? That really doesn't exist. Now, I believe that in my times of transition through my business and or life, that no matter how difficult, it's provided me the opportunity to take those experiences and grow from them. And actually, a lot of time magic happens from those pivotal moments in life. Now, I'm looking forward to my conversation today with my friends and brilliant guest, Mark Allward. Now, Mark, he is a career transition coach. And let me see my notes here. And we're going to discuss his 30 plus years as a staffing expert and business owner. Now, Mark is a single father of three beautiful adult children who are doing their own thing, a proud graduate of the University of Notre Dame and a marketing degree, and is a lifelong entrepreneur and staffing expert who has built and sold two staffing firms. He is a fitness and tradition advocate and an avid reader, writer, and is currently transitioning to online career coaching and professional consulting. He is brilliant. Please help me welcome Mark to the show. So, Mark, thanks for being on.
Oh, Connie, what a wonderful welcome that was. Thank you so much. And I love your messaging as well. That's the whole time you're talking, I'm thinking, well, these are all these topics we can talk about.
Well, yes, Mark and I have been friends for a few years now. He's been on my show three times.
I think this is the third.
Yeah, I think this is the third. And we have, before we started recording, we probably spoke for about an hour just catching up and talking about life and kids and work and business and et cetera. So yeah, we never are a lack of conversation between you and I. But just share with me. So you're like so many of us, right, are pivoting with your life and selling businesses and stuff like that. So what's got you going this time around?
Yeah, it's all related to the career stuff. You know, what you spend 30, 35 years helping people find work and then teaching people to help people find work. And the staffing business is usually segmented into two desks. One is the client interface, the demand source, and then the other is the candidate interface, the supply source. I learned both. So I worked a permanent desk initially way back in the late 80s. And that perm desk is a full desk is what they call it. So you're getting candidates and you're then presenting candidates to the client. In the contract space, the consulting space, the temporary staffing space, where we would hire the consultant on my payroll and then bill him or her out with an hourly rate with a margin for us. Typically that's separated. So you have a sales rep. All they do is talk to clients. They present the candidates to clients. Their interface is the recruiter, and the recruiters are in the back room just talking to candidates, and they don't do the full desk. And I think that experience was really helpful for me because I was a recruiter. I was a sales rep. I was a sales manager. I was a recruiting manager. And then I was an owner and an operator, and I did both perm and contract. So in terms of how companies hire people and how people get hired, I just accumulated a ton of expertise. And to your point, as much of it was learned by failure, it was by success. And so I think my perspective is slightly different. And I think it affords me a level of empathy that most recruiters and salespeople don't have. I think in, and you've had experience with recruiters, I'm sure, in different capacities. Most of them are transactional. Most of them are relatively inefficient. Most of them don't empathize a whole lot or listen very well. They're driven by metrics like number of resumes presented, number of openings taken, and there's no real focus on quality there. It's really numbers. The more numbers, the better. The more numbers, the better. And maybe that's what sales is mostly in general. And you try and find these pockets of opportunity to do the relationship work because it's more fun, it's higher margin, and people are more interesting, you know? Absolutely. So I'm trying to figure out how to take all that and bottle it up into a coaching program that I can scale. And so right now I'm trading time for money, and I've got a couple of other interests that I can share with you as well that are bringing me some income. And I was just joking with somebody the other day, my kids are doing so well. There's family talk about maybe me becoming a chief operations officer for this conglomerate that is the Aylward franchise, but which would be fun.
That, can I tell you that could be pretty cool and really create a legacy for your kids after you're done, right? Because you've built the businesses. So what a great gift. That's kind of cool. Interesting.
It's I was joking with my middle daughter, Hannah, the other day. I said, you know, I would love to help you in, because she's at a point right now where she's got brand, you know, she's getting a banker, getting a lawyer, getting, you know, doing accounting, cash flow reporting, and hiring people and firing people. She's getting into all of the scalable things that happen when you grow. And most of it's new to her, but none of it's new to me. And I said to her the other day, I said, hey, it's free advice up to this point. You give me a COO title, it's going to cost you some money.
I love it. I love it. Pay up, baby. Right. I love it. That's awesome. I have a question for you with the contract work. What we're seeing, because, you know, my kids are 23 and 26, new job. You've been wonderful speaking, especially to my older son. And you gave so many wonderful resources for my kids, which, you know, I love you and I appreciate that. Cool. But my little guy has been a contract employee, which is good, gaining experience, you know, getting some business chops, building his resume, learning skills, and the layoffs and stuff are happening. So he's okay for now, but it appears to me, and I could be way off because not my zone of genius, but it almost looks like companies are hiring as contract workers for 3 to 6 months, kind of prove yourself, and then they're putting the offer to bring people internally. Is that what you're seeing? Is it more cost effective, or am I way off in my perspective here?
No. I think that contract to hire has been a thing for my whole career. And I think two things. One is companies have philosophies, right? They're not right or wrong. You know, I have a project here with a finite end date. I have a good core group of full-time employees. I just want to bring in a couple of consultants with very specific expertise for 3 to 6 months. Project's completed. I don't have to lay anybody off. I just terminate the contracts and they go on and get their next gig. And there are people that are just, they want contract gigs. They don't want to be on W-2. They want the flexibility. They like the travel. Those people are typically younger. That burns you out after a period of time. Sure. But then there are people that are companies that are like, my philosophy is I'm going to invest in my people and I don't want any temporary workers here. I want everybody bought in. I want everybody on the benefit plan. I want everybody getting training. I want everybody treated the same. That's just a different management philosophy. If you hire contractors, and I think in the circumstances we're in today, what you're doing is saying, I don't know what's going to be down the road in 6 months. So I'm not committing to anybody full time. I'm going to get the work. I'm going to have to pay a little more. But if the stuff hits the fan and I got to let a bunch of people go, I can let go of my contractors and my reputation as a fair employer is intact because that's what contractors are for. So it could be any number of reasons. But I've seen it, you know, and that's another area where people are like, well, this is how it's done. No, it's not done any one way. It's done the way you want it done, you know?
Well, depending on objectives, right?
I think it's one of those two things. It's either the philosophy of the company or it's the uncertainty of the economic future, you know, probably both.
Yeah, which makes sense right now. So what are your thoughts on all the layoffs that are happening and, you know, the criticism that's happening with these layoffs?
Well, you know, I think I think there's a lot of corporate malfeasance going on. And I think, you know, if Elon Musk can come in and lay off 11,000 people and not skip a beat, somebody was really operating inefficiently. Somebody was not planning. Somebody was, you know, that's a lot of fluff to get rid of overnight. And all the big companies, you know, they don't, I mean, I don't think anybody sees the economic reality until they're in it. I think people that say they can predict these things are mostly full of shit, pardon my French, but some of them maybe, but very few. So I think that it's just poor planning, not facing up to the economic reality of the latest quarterly reports, appeasing shareholders. It's kind of game playing, I think, you know, on the other side, you know, if I'm a candidate, if I'm an employee, what I'm seeing on LinkedIn, Connie, and I just wrote about it, and I'll mention a workbook I just created. It costs money, but I'm only charging $9 for it. I was thinking to myself, these open to work buttons that people are putting up just speak of desperation to me. Like, no one's going to talk to you because you have an open to work button on. They're going to talk to you because of your background. And if you have an open to work button on, what I'm thinking is you've already spoken to a million recruiters. You've already sent your resume to every company that has an opening online. So if I'm a recruiter, I'm not enthused to reach out to you because you're already all over the place and I'm going to have to get really lucky to be able to help you. And so if you're not a recruiter, you don't think that way. You think open to, I want to let everybody know I'm looking. Well, the other thing people are doing is, well, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
You know, if you have any openings that you think might be of interest to me, let me know. I'm a director. I'm like a director of films, a director of operations. Like, what? You're not giving anybody enough information to help you. And even though people are inclined to want to help, if somebody says, I need your help, and that's all they say, how are you going to help them? Right. So I went around and people are just throwing resumes at online job portals and job boards. Most of those openings don't even exist. They're just trolling for resumes, or mm-hmm. they forgot to take them down when they filled them, or it's such an inefficient place to be looking for work right now. But it's like, you know, there's another way to do this. And I sat down about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, and I said, what's the number one problem that these people have? And I read some Amazon books and I did some research and I went on some career type sites, and it's like, oh, you're not getting in front of decision makers. You're not having conversations with decision makers. So I just created this workbook. I think it's 14 pages. And I thought, well, anybody can afford $9. And maybe if I can get it out there to, you know, 10,000, 100,000 people, I can make a little money, but it also gives people access to these 7 steps that you can take to get in front of decision makers that no one's doing right. No one's teaching them. No one's talking about them. Everyone's just like, well, this is the way you have to do it. You have to take your resume and your cover letter and you have to send it in to that online portal. Then you have to answer all these ridiculous questions that pigeonhole you. No one yet knows your work ethic, your attitude, your intellect, your aptitude, your willingness to learn new things, your team play. All those things that are the only things that are important.
Yeah.
You're not even communicating those things. And then you're getting rejected without any feedback at all. So you don't have any way to improve. There's no, without feedback that's specific, you're going to continue to do the same thing. And just people are just frustration, frustration, frustration. So I created that thing, and I also attached some discounted hourly coaching to it. So I thought, you know, if get the workbook. Do everything I say to do in there. You're going to feel like you have now more control over your search, yeah. Yeah. Which is the most frustrating thing when you're like, I don't have any control over any of this stuff. If anything, this thing will make you, it'll give you control over your search. And I won't give away any of this stuff because, you know, it's a whole podcast worth of information, but simple stuff to follow. And then if you want to throw some gas on the fire and you like the book, hook me up for a 50% discount on an hour of my time, and we'll get you to a place of clarity and confidence and hopefulness. And then it's up to you. But that's a distinct improvement from where you are right now, because everyone's just frustrated, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, sales is a numbers game, but numbers are nothing more than a measurement behaviors is what drives the numbers. So it's the same thing you're talking about. Yes, you can't send out one resume and think you're going to get the job of your life or have a perfect resume and not send it out like somebody's going to knock on your door. There is an element of movement, right, that you have to get the resumes out. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it's like throwing spaghetti against the wall. Let's see what sticks. Yeah. If we can refine what we're doing, obviously you have to have a good resume and all those things. But if we can refine what we're doing, we have a better chance. And the other thing you said about decision maker, I'm giggling because this all mirrors, right, sales behavior. Behaviors as well, because behaviors, mm-hmm. behaviors drive the numbers. Mm-hmm. If I'm, what was I saying? See, I lost my trend of thought, Mark, for 61 years here. What was I saying? You had said something.
Just chucking resumes out there. You know, you got to get the resumes out.
The decision maker. That's what I wanted to comment on. If we're not in front of the person who's going to make the decision, I don't care if it's for a job, for sales, for, you know, hiring a babysitter. I don't know. But if you're not in front of the decision maker, it's like you're blowing into the wind. You're screaming into the wind because if they can't make the decision or they're not empowered or have the capacity to do it, you're talking to the wrong person. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure that you get in front of that right person. So there's got to be a process to get through the noise, right? Those barriers to get to the decision maker. So do you have any ideas on that? Because I think that we have to get to the decision maker. That's the core. Well, but how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, I think that, and you know this because you've been in sales your whole life, that how accessible is the decision maker? So I've had conversations with, in my space was technology. So it was like software engineering manager, CIO, director of IT, whatever. The person at the top of the IT heap, mostly software in my space, but you know, the hierarchies are all the same. It doesn't matter what the industry is. The person who has the budget to hire you, who's going to sign your paycheck or do your review or, you know, it looks different depending on the size of the company. But for instance, and I don't have the stats to back this up, but I've heard it a couple of times. And even if it's close, it's dramatically relevant. 70% of the jobs that are open right now in the United States are at companies with less than 250 employees. Okay. So how easy is it to get to the IT guy at a 200 person shop versus a Forbes 500 bank, right? Sure. It's very easy versus impossible, right? So what if I just started looking at companies with 200 to 250 employees, got on LinkedIn, join some groups where these people are hanging out, talking about their love of motorcycles or the type of coffee they drink, it non-business related groups on LinkedIn. And you begin your conversations by saying, hey, you and I are fascinated by the same stuff here. I was wondering, you know, what your thoughts were on the most recent Harley Davidson bike that just came out or whatever. Right. Or why are you drinking the dark roasted stuff? You know, I've been drinking coffee my whole life. Breaking the ice. Non-work related, and then three or four touches in saying, you know, I've been looking around your site and I went on your website. What you guys are doing at your company is really interesting. I also think I don't know if you guys are looking for any assistance with that particular work, but I've got a lot of experience in that area and wonder if you'd be open to having a discussion about what that might look like. Real soft, you know, Nobody's doing any of that. You know, nobody's doing any of that. The other thing is like, if you're a programmer or you're a copywriter or you're a sales rep, doesn't matter. Could you, with all of the technology in place right now, like Loom videos, Zoom videos, you know, could you not create a work product that said, this is the, I'm a software engineer. I code in Java. The last solution I delivered to my previous employer involved this. Take a look. This is what the code looks like. This is how I think about solutioning. And this is how my syntax is set up the way that it is. A 5-minute Loom video in the hands of somebody who's hiring. It's like, I don't have to guess. I don't have to look at that guy's resume. I know he can do what I need him to do, or I know he can't. Right. Cause you know what these hiring authorities are doing? You think they like the process that exists right now? They hate it. They're looking at resumes of people that are completely unqualified.
Yeah.
They're scheduling interviews with people that are already off the market. They're spending 6 months trying to hire somebody that if they gave me, humbly speaking, exclusive rights to their opening, I could fill it in a week. Okay. What's 6 months of a director of IT level time worth, right? Yeah. What is being delayed 6 months in terms of that project? That's millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So whenever I was able to get a decision maker on the phone, when I was in the transaction space, I would say, so how are you feeling about the existing process of bringing people in? Right across the board, these people would be like, it's horrible. It's horrible. I hate my human resources department. I'm like, well, we don't have to hate on them, but like the reason that human resources is not the efficient way to hire particularly critically skilled people with advanced degrees and specific engineering type or medical type technology is human resources is, and you know this because you've been inside the big corporations, is to protect the organization from exposure and liability, right? Mm-hmm. Processes, systems, benefits, training, reviews, adherence to procedure and policy, employee handbooks. It's an incredibly valuable role, but what corporate America has done, and they did it a long time ago, is say, oh, and do this too. Hire people that you have no idea what they do, but you figure it out. It's like, that's not a throwaway function. That's the most important function of an organization, is hiring the right people. So the whole system is broken, and the people that are out there looking for work now are just accepting this is the way we have to do it. And my contention is, no, it's the complete opposite. And if you break the rules, like I don't know if I told you this story, but years ago, I had a buddy, he started a business and he had to get in touch with the owners of professional sports franchise stadiums because he put the advertising in the men's room above the urinals before and then digitized it, you know, captive audience. Male,
that's
25 to 55 years old, yeah. Beer, hot women, cars. I mean, you know the exact demographic. And what do you got? You got 60 to 90 seconds of their full attention.
Yeah.
They're not looking at anything else.
Yeah.
Brilliant idea. But anyway, and he sold the company for $30 million like 5 years later. But
awesome.
One of the first calls he made was to the guy that ran the Philadelphia 76ers. He found his phone number, he got his secretary on the phone. And the secretary picks up and says, can I help you? And he says, you know, can I speak to so-and-so? I can't remember the owner's name at the time. Can I tell him who's calling? Yeah, it's Larry Bird. Hang on just a second, Mr. Bird. He puts the call through and he's like, Larry, how's it going? He goes, Mr. So-and-so, my name's not Larry. My name's so-and-so. I have a fantastic idea for you. All I need is like 15 seconds of your time. Can you give me 15 seconds of your time? Now, the guy that owns the Philadelphia 76ers, he doesn't own that team without having balls, without being brave, right?
Yeah.
So he looks at that kid and goes, oh man, I got to hear what this kid has to say. This is awesome. Not absolutely. You asshole, you lied to me. No, because that's not how decisive, successful people think. Absolutely. They look for risk takers. They look for creativity. They look for extending yourself a little bit beyond your comfort zone. Yeah. So I think people just need to understand that the people that are trying to hire are just caught in this quagmire of lousy quality paperwork, and they're not getting their jobs done. They're not getting their promotions. They're being hindered by this.
Yeah.
And we're supporting the nonsense. And so somebody needs to just step in and break the chain and get their hands slapped and apologize later. Does that make sense?
It does, because it's a pattern interrupt, right? Just because we've always done it this way doesn't mean it's the right way. And I've shared this before on the show, but it's hysterical. You know, it's Christmas and the mom is making a ham, and she cuts the front and the back of the ham, puts it in the pan, puts it in the oven. And the daughter, the little one, says to mom, Mom, why do you cut the front and the back of the ham? She goes, I don't know. Go ask grandma. So she walks into the other room, asks grandma, and grandma says, oh, you know what? I don't know. Go ask great grandma, who's taking a nap in the bedroom. So when she wakes up, the little girl says to great grandma, you know, mom does this and this. And why? She said that it's because, you know, that's the way you did it. Tell me, you know, why did you do it? And the great grandma said, oh, because my pan was too small. So it's exactly what you're saying. Because it's just the way we've done it is such a limiting way to approach these problems to find the right candidates. So not only do we stop the rotating door, right? The revolving door of people coming and leaving costs so much money. And then searching for people for 6 months because our overall process just isn't working. So here's my question with that. What could companies do just to do a better job of the hiring process? Because you're right, these poor HR people, they're supposed to create policies, right? Make sure they get the harassment training in, and they have a lot of compensation. They have to do the research for that right, run the numbers, and it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Now that you have to hire, what can we do differently? What could companies do differently?
Well, I think there's a couple things, and you know, it depends on the size. And there are a handful of companies out there that do this really well, but there's so few of them. It's a quality thing. It's like, I remember doing business with some financial services firms in Boston where one or two of them had 7 rounds of interviews before they'd make a decision. Right. And in 7 rounds of interviews, you have at least 7 different people, probably closer to 14 or 21. You're occupying a huge amount of corporate time to make a decision that one person should be able to make. Yeah. One person. Yeah. So empowering your managers to hire their own people without the process, that the more time that goes on, the less interested people become, the more likely it is that they get a job with someone else and they're gone by the time you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And your reputation suffers in the marketplace because you're not decisive, and no one wants to work for someone who's not decisive. So I think I think they should take this other phenomenon that's been in place for a long time is this vendor managed service, right? VMS systems.
Yep.
And it's when large companies get a piece of software that every recruiter that works with them has to plug into, and they have a list of 200 vendors. So if I'm on a list of 200 vendors, what are my chances of success in any of those one transactions? 1 out of 200?
Yeah.
At best?
Every time.
Why am I incented to work that opening? I'm incented to take people out of that company and put them somewhere else. That's what I'm incented to do. So I think it's just facing the reality. Most of it's process stuff, but also if you've seen a job description at a big company lately, it's bullshit. It doesn't say anything. It says excellent communication skills and the leadership capabilities and the ability to interface with different corporate cultures and personalities. It's like, what is this person expected to do?
Exactly.
Right? And I think more companies should focus on, forget about degrees, forget about credentials, forget about experience, forget about certificates. And I'm exaggerating to make a point, but I want to know the answer to one question. What's the hardest thing that's ever happened to you in your life? Tell me that story and how you got out the other side of that, on the other side of that, and then shut up for 15 minutes. I'm going to know how smart they are. I'm going to know how personally accountable they are. I'm going to know how creative they are. I'm going to know how self-accountable they are. Like, I'm going to know everything I need to know. Now, if they also need to know a particular software language, you know, give them a 5-question test. Most of the good software architects and leaders in the software space that I know say, I can tell if somebody can do their job in 15 minutes on the phone.
Yeah.
I don't even need to meet them. Right. Yep. So I think most of that falls into the category of what you alluded to earlier. This is the way we've always done it. And to change all those things that I just said, that's a lot of change. There's a lot of politics in all those changes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't
jobs.
Yeah. Creation of jobs, elimination of jobs, changing of job responsibilities. But there's too many people involved in the hiring process. It takes too long. And we're putting people through steps that are not addressing the most important qualities of a potential employee. So does that help?
It does. And, you know, it's funny. My husband recently actually just started a new job. And when he was interviewing into a couple of different companies, and we're just very honest in this house, right? If you ask me a question, I'm going to answer you honestly. I'll let you know if it's my opinion versus a fact, but I'll answer you honestly. I don't hold anything back, nor does my husband. So he's on these interviews. And, you know, again, like you said, there was multiple people in the room. He had an interview with different people, et cetera, which is fine, right? Get to know him. The first day he interviewed with 3 or 4 people. Now he's known in the industry. He's an expert in his field, right? And so this one company, the recruiter said, they want to know, are you interviewing? And my husband said, yeah, I have an interview next Tuesday in Manhattan. And he said, I'll even tell you the company and what the position is. So that, yeah. Like, I'm not lying. I really have an interview. They made a decision within a week to hire him. And when the boss met him, she called the recruiter and said, he's our guy. He's exactly what we need. He's exactly what we want. We can't lose him. So it's interesting he really did have these other interviews right mm-hmm. lined up. So mm-hmm. there was truth in it, but it took that. Now I don't know if that's how they roll all the time. I can just share the experience that my husband had, but kudos to them for seeing that. Whoa, he's exactly what we're looking for. Why are we looking any further? Right. Mm-hmm. He is known in the industry. There's people within the organization who have worked with my husband through the past 30 years, mm-hmm. you know, all, you know, resounding confidence in him. That person, her name is Nicole, pulled that trigger so quickly. And I said to him, I commend her. I can't believe it happened this fast. Like yep. we were shocked, especially yep. at his level, that it was bam, bam, bam. So was it the motivation of the other job, or was it just that she had confidence in what she saw with my husband, plus the feedback she got from these other people that knew him personally? She did a good job vetting him on her own so that she can fast forward that decision. Yep. There has to be more of that, I think, within the organization. To use the word empowerment, mm-hmm. apparently she must have been very empowered, because yep. she's the one who said, what are we doing? The offer him the position. And that was within 3 days. And this is a higher level position. This isn't yeah. like an entry yeah. level thing.
No, that's a great story. It's there's hope, you know, there's hope. I think it had to do with all of them. When I was a recruiter, I was tasked with, and it made sense to me, I want to know everything else that you have going on, Mr. Candidate, because for a variety of reasons. One, we can leverage that information, because if other people want to date you, you're more attractive, right? That's just, that's human nature.
It's true.
If another company has the ability to act more quickly than we do, we're going to lose you. So how do we expedite our process over here? Mm-hmm. Maybe she overstepped her boundaries and didn't ask permission and didn't get in trouble because she made a good decision. So she's got balls, and not a lot of middle managers and even senior managers are willing to. It's amazing to me, Connie, how many managers in the IT space were scared of human resources, scared of them. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's a breakdown in the corporate culture. But yeah, no, I think that transparency is as well is always good. And yeah, I mean, good for him, good for him. But that's an anomaly, unfortunately, that the speed of that decision. You know,
and it's funny because he has looked for a job, you know, COVID, and now he's been 3 years. And then the previous, he was with a company for 30 years. Right. So it's not like he's out there looking for jobs. Yeah. And that I was like, what? Like, what? They gave you it all. Like, we were giggling. I said, oh, you're that good. Right. I married you. You're that good. We were joking around. But yes, I that was my gut, too, that it was an anomaly. I don't see that with my corporate clients, that, you know, I'm told that it takes them 6 months to fill a position because they don't have the candidates. So yeah. Is it because they don't have the candidates? Is it because the process is broken? All the things that you've just mentioned. We're out of time, but this is such a thought provoking. You know why I'm it intrigues me, because I think that the solution is change. Mm-hmm. We have to go back and examine what's working. Let's keep that piece of it. But what's not working, we have to retool and reconfigure. And the other thing, too, with now this AI, humans aren't even looking at resumes anymore. So that because you have the algorithms and stuff. So you mm-hmm. have people who are super, super qualified and brilliant and in their zone of genius within an industry, but they might not even get to the HR person because they didn't make it through the algorithm because yep. they didn't hire someone to do their resume. And I'm not saying you shouldn't hire someone to do your resume. You probably should. But you see what I'm saying? If the candidate, the stellar candidate, is missing one piece of the puzzle, they're not fitting into your process. The process doesn't even start. You're log jam before you even get into the counter, right into the hiring.
You know, I know we're pressed up against the clock, but I think the so many ideas. I think, you know, I could walk into almost any company, and if I was given access to their hiring processes, I could fix them in a week.
I bet.
And I just need access to a few stakeholders and the sponsorship of an executive overseeing that function. But it would be readily evident to me. And I think the flip side of that is when you're looking for work, like I said earlier, stop doing what you're doing and do something else. And yeah. it's about human contact, and it's about storytelling, yeah. and it's about, you know, personal accountability. But all of those ideas are expanded on in this workbook. And if I can give it to you, I didn't mention it to you before because you asked me for my lead magnet, the freebie, which I gave you. And please provide that to people, because that's a valuable workbook, too. But this one is everything is 7pillarsglobal.com, like the number 7. Mm-hmm. And this one's / decision-makers. And so if anybody wants that $9 book, I think if you're frustrated looking for work right now, it's $9 well spent. It's Absolutely. Worth a lot more than $9, but it's also simple and it's actionable. And I think almost anybody that reads it will at least go, oh my gosh, that's a great idea once. And that's all you need.
That's all you need.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Yeah, it gets the engines running. And it's a pattern interrupt, right? Keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. So yeah. Definition of insanity, hello.
Yeah.
Try something different. So let me, I do want to give your info. Listen, Mark is my friend and he's brilliant. And we have these freaking off the charts conversation that are real and not superficial. He's the real deal. I don't hang out with anyone who's not. So Mark, his email is mark@7pillarsglobal.com. And the website, same thing, number 7, don't write out 7. So 7pillarsglobal.com. The free book is Find Your True Purpose. Can you just speak briefly about that? And I will put that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So when I started coaching people and stopped recruiting people, one of the things I found immediately was almost everyone is presuming that the next thing that they do has to be the same as what they've always done. Hmm. And particularly people in midlife, but even people in their 20s and 30s that are like, you know, they got into what they're doing because of circumstance or the suggestion of someone else, mm-hmm. a father, a mother, a guidance counselor, a coach, an uncle, a mentor. But it's like, well, what if I don't want to be a doctor, Dad, just because you're a doctor, you know? And I got through medical school and I'm like, this sucks, right? Most people stay doing what they're doing because it's scary to move. It's scary to change. They don't think they can. They don't think their skills are transferable. I mean, if you can manage people and you can solve problems and you can think critically, you can do almost any job.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so technical could be taught.
Yeah. It's any most of the good technical people I know is I don't care what languages they know. If they understand object-oriented programming and solving problems, sure. I can teach them. Those are just tools like a hammer right. or screwdriver. Right. And so that book came as a result of, well, wait a second, before we start looking, what are we looking for?
Absolutely.
Like, what do you want out of life?
Yeah.
What's the cliche? What's your why? Well, how come we're not talking about that?
Yeah.
So this workbook, it's probably an hour or two worth of focused energy. It's very difficult, but it's very simple. Because you're asking yourself questions that most people don't ask themselves.
Yeah.
And you're also going to get answers, honest answers, some of which you're probably not going to like.
Yeah.
But that's what life is about. And if you don't look into that mirror and have that conversation with yourself, and then you start going to look for something, you're going to end up with something you don't want. And that's not what, there's no purpose to that. So finding your true purpose flushes that out. And then the second step in that process is, okay, now let's tell that story. What does that story sound like?
Yeah.
And that's why I get people to pay me hourly, is I get into that stuff, because the tactical stuff is all the same. I redo people's resumes and LinkedIn profiles as part of my service. It's included in the hourly wage. I wouldn't pay anybody to do that. I do that. I've been doing that for free my whole life.
Yeah.
And I know what the resume is supposed to look like, because that's the tool that I've been using for 30 years. So. Yeah. People that are charging for resume stuff, some of them are probably pretty good. Most of it's a waste of money. I think you got to find somebody like me that brings a practicality to this stuff. Yeah. It doesn't have to be me, but it should be somebody like me, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you just have so much experience. And it was funny when you said, because I go in, same thing with clients, because I've been doing this so long, it becomes part of our DNA. I don't think we realize it. And they say something and I'll say, oh, well, what about this? And you see, they look at each other. Blank stares. Oh, we never thought of that.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, well, that's one thing we should look at. And yeah. like right out of the gate, it's the first. And they look at me like, how did you know that? And I said, because that's my expertise. Like sometimes I don't even know how to answer that. It's just, it's obvious to me because I've been doing it for 40 years. It's okay that it's not obvious to you. That's why you're hiring me, or that's why you're having this conversation with me. We can't know everything. So stop putting that on yourself. Hire the experts to help you move the needle. Time is money. And I think we waste so much time, because I could do my own resume. I'll research it. Hire someone like you. Figure out the why. Go through these exercises. And now you're looking for the real job that you actually might be happy in. And the last thing I wanted to say about that was, we're looking for jobs. Sometimes we're thrown into a situation of income. I need income. Let me get this job. It's not what I want to do, but I'll do it for a while. And then life happens. You get married, you have kids, cars break down, and now you're staying in that job. And what ends up happening 30 years later, because of a circumstance, you never pause to say, what do I really want for my life? So you just go into coast mode, default life, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then 70%, the Gallup poll a few years ago, I think it was like 74% of Americans hate their jobs. They feel it's soul sucking, but it's a paycheck. That should not how we live our life should be how we live our lives. And that's why I do think coaches like you and people, well, like me with the sales stuff, right? I think we're a needed resource. So stop being penny wise and dollar foolish. Move forward, enjoy, create, right? And let's move the needle and get stuff done. It takes effort to do that though.
Yeah, it's again, we could go on about this. I have so many more thoughts, and maybe we can do another one of these sooner than later. But
yeah,
I think it's really giving yourself permission, or someone like me giving you permission to just think differently.
Yeah.
You know, like don't do anything just because you've always done it that way. Don't do anything because someone says that's the way it's supposed to be done.
That's
question
right.
Those things. Question all of those things. I mean, my father said to me years ago about my Catholic faith when I questioned it. And I said, I don't know about this God stuff, Dad. I was like 17. He said, I thought he was going to be mad at me. And he goes, no. You question your faith. That's how you strengthen your faith.
That's right.
It's the same thing, you know?
I love it. I noticed how you said a few years ago when you were 17. That was good, my brother.
Hey, I'm 30. I'm just like you, Connie. I'm 30 years old until somebody puts a mirror in front of me.
Exactly. I could be 30 for this 31st time, but I'm 30, right? It's so fun. Mark, I love you, my friend. Just such a great show. Great content. Thank you for the free gift. Thank you for the $9 book. I start with the free book, everybody. And then I'm telling you, you're going to want more. So remember, 7 pillars. Let me go back to my notes here. 7pillarsglobal.com. Check them out. And Mark is his name. Thanks again, Mark. And thank you for listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.com. Truly wish you an inspired week. Here's the deal. Change your thinking. I think Mark said it best right at the end of the show. If you start to change the way you think, the things that happen in your life will start to change. Defy the definition of insanity. Do something different. Information's a beautiful thing. If you do nothing with it, simply information. Take one of Mark shared several great tips during this episode. Take one of them, and I guarantee magic will happen on the back end. I thank Mark. Thank you again. I love you all. Thank you for tuning into Enlightenment of Change. I will see you next week. Have a great one. Do one action step different than you did yesterday. Love you. Have a great one.